Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of The Antique Show. I'm your darling and dashing host, Pusha Nevada. We are here today with Dr. Milton Cernett. He's on the faculty of Syracuse University. He's been teaching there since 1975. He's a graduate of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri, where he received his MA and PhD in American History at the University of Delaware. He's currently Professor Emeritus of African American Studies and History, and he's an adjunct professor of religion at Syracuse University. He's published 8 books and numerous scholarly essays. Among his books are Abolition Acts, Farrar Green, Oneida Institute, and the Black Freedom Struggle, as well as a new book called Come to Peterborough, which commemorates the 175th anniversary of the founding of the New York State Anti-Slavery Society, October 21 through 22, 1835, and he's here to talk to us a little bit about his new book and what's going on in New York with the anti-slavery movement society. So, Dr. Cernett, are you there?
I am here. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us. What's going on with the commemoration?
Well, we invite folks to come to Peterborough. Peterborough is in Madison County, New York, central New York, and it was here in October of 1835 that abolitionists completed the organization of the New York State Anti-Slavery Society, which was an auxiliary of the American Anti-Slavery Society. So beginning Friday, October 22nd, and running through Saturday and Sunday, we are celebrating that anniversary with a dramatic recreation of the events that led up to the founding, the riots in Utica, New York, and then the welcoming in Peterborough. We are talking about the significance of that revolution, really, in American social reform movements that was really key to helping develop the abolitionist movement.
Okay, now, as I understand what I've read from the bio, that in 1835, a group of abolitionists met at the Presbyterian Church in Utica, and they were trying to organize an anti-slavery society, and they kind of got pushed out of town. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, that's a good way of phrasing it, I guess. Yes, a call went out to abolitionists from across the state to come to Utica, which at that time was an important city along the Erie Canal. And there they intended to organize an abolitionist society on the principles of immediate, unconditional, uncompensated emancipation, which was a radical departure in the thinking at that time. And even before they gathered in Utica, the conservatives, led by some what they call gentlemen of property who saw these abolitionists as troublemakers, they organized to try to prevent it. Well, the abolitionists did come, and in October of 1835, they are conducting their meeting in the Bleecker Street Presbyterian Church, some 600 of them, when this mob breaks in, and there is a great disturbance, and eventually the abolitionists have to flee the church, and the abolitionist mob, or anti-abolitionist mob, follows them. Some of them all the way to Peterborough. But it is their attempt to organize a meeting that creates this uproar. The mob breaks in, and then they are invited to come to Peterborough by Gerrit Smith, who will become a very prominent abolitionist. So they are given a safe haven, and that's how the story continues on in Peterborough.
Mm-hmm. What caused the abolitionist movement? What's going on in 1835, particularly in the North, and how did it start? What made people interested in an abolitionist movement? What kind of people? Were they all Quakers? Were they all religious men? Were they businessmen? Who were the abolitionists?
As you might know, the debate about slavery in one form or another had been going on for, you might say, some two centuries, and it had intensified at the time of the American Revolution. And the great paradox of slavery and freedom was exposed by the rhetoric of people like Thomas Jefferson and others who wanted freedom from being under the thumb of the British. And so when those principles are sort of got in the air of democracy and equality, that was one source of the philosophy that fed into the abolitionist movement. And the other was a religious revival called the Second Great Awakening in the 1820s, a decade earlier. And out of this revival came the notion that slavery was a sin and a great curse upon the national soul. And so the abolitionists, by and large, were young people. I mean, in their 20s and 30s. And, of course, the lifespan back then wasn't as long as today. But generally speaking, they were young people. Some of them were clergy, but not all of them. They came, we might say, from middle-class backgrounds. And by 1835, many of them had dedicated themselves to their sacred vocation of being an abolitionist. They were lecturers who would go from town to town, risking often their own welfare to speak on behalf of those who were enslaved. The principal voice in spearheading the new abolitionism of that time period was William Lloyd Garrison of Boston, a young journeyman printer, son of an alcoholic father, who came to the conviction that slavery was a violation of both the laws of God and the principles inherent in the American charter documents. And by 1833, they have a national society formed in Philadelphia. 2 years later, now we're trying to organize in New York State a state society, and that's when the trouble begins locally in Utica.
Mm-hmm. So who was Gerrit Smith? Was he a clergyman or a businessman?
No, Gerrit Smith was the son of a wealthy landholder who had been a partner with John Jacob Astor. You perhaps have heard of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. That name carries on. Astor was a principal in the fur trading with Native Americans, and and Gerrit Smith was a partner. Gerrit Smith's father was a partner and had significant land holdings. But as a very young man, Gerrit Smith had to take over the stewardship of that. In his early years, he was not an abolitionist by any means. He supported colonization. The American Colonization Society organized in 1816. Their solution was the return of African Americans to Africa, to Liberia specifically. Gerrit Smith was giving money to them. Gerrit Smith was troubled, though, by the debate between the colonizationists and the abolitionists, and kind of sitting on the fence. That particular October morning, he happened to be in Utica. He was on his way to see his father on a trip, and perhaps out of curiosity, if nothing else, he went down to the Bleecker Street Church, and he is there in the church when that mob breaks in.
Okay.
And now he sees that the issue is also the issue of free speech, and that if abolitionists don't have the right to speak on behalf of those who can't speak for themselves, that is their own rights, that is the abolitionist rights, are endangered. So that's why he invites the abolitionists now to come on down to Peterborough, about 28-30 miles distance, and resume their meeting there in the safety of that much smaller community.
Mm-hmm. So that's why they left, as you mentioned before, left the church in Utica, because it was pretty much unsafe.
That's right. They were hounded out of that. They were pursued by the abolitionist mob. Some primary sources say that some of the mob were hired guns, you might say, some Irish toughs they had brought up from New York City. In any case, there were several attempts to attack some of the abolitionist homes, and the mob did attack one of the local newspapers and throw the presses out of the window because it was favorable to at least free discussion of the issue. And so the abolitionists, some come by canal boat. They go as far as Canastota on the Erie Canal, about 104 of them or something like that, and then they walk to 10 miles up the hill to Peterborough. Some go by carriage, and some walk, believe it or not, that 27 miles, and they get as far as a place called Vernon, and a mob has some of the ragtail elements of the mob pursued them and tried to attack them there. And there's a really footnote story here. It's interesting that one of the largest men in the abolitionist group took a bedpost, and threatened to beat back the mob if they tried to assault them. So it was touch and go until they got to Peterborough.
Now, I understand the mob trying to sort of like undermine the whole abolitionist movement, of course, running them out of town. But was there any, legal penalty for abolitionists trying to fight for or abolish slavery? How did the law factor, if at all, factor into the whole abolitionist movement?
At that time, unlike by the 1850s, there weren't some of the abolitionists, you know, were, of course, involved in activities like the Underground Railroad. And by 1850, with the Fugitive Slave Law, there were penalties for an individual who assisted a runaway. Generally, there weren't penalties for, laws that prevented you from speaking on behalf of the slave. It was generally public opinion that if you were one of the agents who went in on behalf of the anti-slavery society into a town, and you put up a handbill that said that abolitionists lecture Friday evening 7 p.m., you might get there and find that a mob had assembled, and rotten tomatoes and brickbats and threats and so on. So it was primarily public opinion that was being used against the abolitionists. By 1837, there was a tremendous effort by the abolitionists to flood Congress with petitions on behalf of the enslaved. And Congress finally passed the gag law, which meant they were going to table those petitions and not take them up. So there were efforts by the Southerners in Congress to throttle the abolitionists. But in these early years, the early 1830s, it was largely just sort of public sentiment that was the problem.
Okay. The fugitive slave law, did that in any way, or I can imagine that white men, or particularly property-owning white men, did they feel as though the fugitive slave law, I don't know, denied them some kind of right?
Well, certainly the Southerners protested the failure of the northern states to return runaways, and there were what they call personal liberty laws, where a northern state favorable to the rights of a runaway would claim that, for example, when William Henry Seward was governor of New York, he got into a debate with the governor of Virginia as to which state law, you know, once a fugitive escaped to New York State, was he under the protection, he or she under the protection of New York State law, or still under Virginia law? So Southerners who considered runaways property, lost property, tried every way possible to have this problem federalized, and that's what eventually happens in 1850 with the Fugitive Slave Bill. Now the law has teeth, and the Southerners can call upon federal commissioners, federal authorities to back up their claims to runaways. Southerners had sent bounty hunters into the North earlier on, but it becomes more and more a fight also in the courts as well as in Congress. Yeah.
Okay. And that's pretty much what your new book is about, Come to Peterboro, commemorating the 175th anniversary of the founding of New York State Anti-Slavery Society. And you're going to be presenting this at the commemoration?
Yes. On the Friday evening, there's going to be a reenactment, a dramatic reenactment of the mobbing in Utica and then the welcome in Peterboro. Then on Saturday, I'm going to be offering a lyceum on the Underground Railroad, kind of a third part of a five-part series on abolitionism. And we're going to have the commemoration of the two of the individuals who've been inducted most recently into the National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum, which is in Peterboro, and it occupies the building, the Smithfield Community Center, which was the Presbyterian Church. So we were chartered in 2004, and we've inducted 11 individuals so far. Our first class was inducted into the National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum in 2005, people like Frederick Douglass, William Lloyd Garrison, Lucretia Mott, Gareth Smith, and Harriet Tubman. And this year, we are commemorating the induction of Theodore Dwight Weld, who was one of those young abolitionists who went out and got mobbed, and Louis Tappan, who was a man from New York City. And then I'm giving the keynote address on Saturday evening, talking about the significance of the founding of the society.
Okay. You know, interesting question here. My producer wants to know how does the fugitive slave law relate to the immigration laws in Arizona today?
Well, only in a very general sense, then, is that it is a debate about who should be welcome and who shouldn't be welcome. The case of the fugitive slave is, of course, an internal matter, mm-hmm. because the South and the North, even though they, you know, eventually will come to a civil war, at that time were part of one legal entity. So it's not a case of immigration. It was a case of internal debate upon on where that boundary line of slavery and freedom should be drawn. And, of course, the North Star shone brightly in many places in the South, too. So following the North Star, which is a kind of a theme of our celebration, was something that Harriet Tubman and many others did until they got all the way to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So these types of, this is the first time I've heard of a commemoration of this sort. Do people generally come out to support the function?
Well, they do, and the public now can make nominations to the National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum. In other words, if there's an abolitionist that was very well known in your community or someone that you wish to nominate, there is a process, and you go to our website, which is www.abolitionhof, that's one word, abolitionhof.org. You can find out more about the organization as well as become a member and learn about events and indeed even nominate individuals. Every other year, we, just like the Women's Hall of Fame or the Baseball Hall of Fame, you know, New York State has many halls of fame. We have the Boxing Hall of Fame near us and the Soccer Hall of Fame. Every other year, we induct new names, mm-hmm. like Frederick Douglass or John Brown's been inducted, Sojourner Truth. And then every other year, as this present year, we commemorate them. That is, we hold an educational event to educate the public and ourselves better about the significance of these heroes and heroines from the past.
Sure. You mentioned Lewis Tapp, and he went on to defend the Amistad case.
You're right. You're exactly right, yeah. And yeah. In fact, 2 years ago, I think it was, when sometimes our events are held in co-sponsorship with nearby universities. I believe it was 2 years ago when we held the induction at Colgate University. We showed the Amistad movie, which is, if people have not seen that, that is a powerful, powerful story. And Lewis Tappan, very excellently portrayed in that movie, was one of the principal voices trying to find a way in which the Amistad captives could avail themselves of the protection through the courts. And it's a movie that's worth seeing in the same fashion as the movie Amazing Grace, which is about John Newman and the British anti-slavery story. So much of this history in the last 5 years or so, 10 years, has been brought to the public's attention in very good ways.
Yeah, is it true that Tappan, he was considered a pretty tough, but is it true that he wanted to hang the pirates?
You know, I don't remember that detail, honestly. I wouldn't doubt that in the passion of the moment he might well have done. I'm trying to remember. Sometimes, maybe this is true of some of your listeners, you study the history, you read the historical books, and then you see the movie, and sometimes you get confused because the movie, while it may be well done, sometimes there's dramatic interpretation there. So I'm not sure if I'm remembering the movie or the historical book, but it's a question that I'm sure could be answered if you consulted some of the good histories, you know.
Yeah, my producer says that on her website, on her YouTube website, there's actually a letter that Tappan wrote. I don't know who he's writing it to, where I believe he mentions the wanting to hang the pirates
or something like that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the commemoration. Who funds that kind of program?
This particular year, we're trying to keep our costs to the bare minimum. The New York State Council for the Humanities is sponsoring my Lyceum, but most of the other events are free and open to the – well, everything's free and open to the public with the there is a charge for the dinner, which is going to be a nice catered candlelight dinner in the National Abolitionist Hall of Fame, in the very building where, of course, these events took place when they resumed the convention. So it should be an interesting historical mood that it sent. But the other things that we're doing, the speakers are volunteering their time and expertise. And then, of course, we have the Cabinet of Freedom is made up of good folks who volunteer to be part of the, I'd say, the institutional fabric of the National Abolitionist Hall of Fame. So there's no big funding out there. We wish there was. Maybe someday there will be. But it's been largely a volunteer effort.
Is there any kind of mass transit directed towards the site of the commemoration where people, I don't know?
Well, that you've asked a good question, because Peterborough is in Madison County, and if some of your listeners know Madison County, we are, you can get to it from Syracuse, and you can get to it from Utica, but it is rural. If you drive into Madison County on a beautiful fall afternoon like today was, you think you're going back in time to the 19th century, because there's a village green with a monument to the Civil War soldier, and each summer there is a Civil War battle reenactment. But it is a small community, and there's no rapid transit unless you pretty much have to come maybe like they did in 1835, take a canal boat.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
No, there are certainly good roads that lead to it, but it's Garrett Smith's estate or mansion was in the town of Smithfield, in the middle of a vast expanse of acreage that his father had purchased from Native Americans, from the Iroquois, and it's pretty much small town rural today. There is cluster houses, and then the Garrett Smith estate, which was on Sunday, we're having the ribbon cutting, because this is a National Historic Landmark, and we're having the ribbon cutting for the Garrett Smith estate and also for the National Abolitionist Hall of Fame, and so there will be representatives of different figures, hopefully from the political life and else, other avenues there to help us with that event.
Okay. I understand that the church is now the Smithfield Community Center. Is that a historical landmark?
Yes, it is. And it's part of the Madison County Freedom Trail, and it is formerly the Presbyterian Church, which it was at the time that Garrett Smith invited these abolitionists to come to the safety of Peterborough, where he fed them, or got up early in the morning, at least his household staff did, fed them, and then that next morning they convened in the Presbyterian Church. Then it became a private Evans Academy, and then it became a public I think elementary school. In fact, I run into people who attended. And then more recently, it's been the Smithfield Community Center. It's where you go to pay your taxes and things like this, or to vote. But it is also the National Abolitionist Hall of Fame and Museum, and we have a number of exhibits there. And hopefully someday there will be a full-fledged museum honoring the abolitionists.
Great, great. So back to the website, is there can a person go to the website to find more out about the commemoration and particularly the directions to the place?
By all means. It's www.abolitionhof, abolitionhof.org. And the details regarding the 155th anniversary are there, as well as past events, the inductees, and there are, I think there is a map of how to find Peterborough. If not, people should just, as they say, and it's now a verb, to Google Peterborough, New York, and they should be, I mean, it's not that far off the New York Thruway. Is one way to think of it. It's between Syracuse and Utica, off the New York Thruway, and this time of the year, late October, it is really a beautiful drive through the rolling hills of Madison County. The colors are really at peak now, and as you get closer to Peterborough, you almost think you're in a time machine. It's turning backwards.
Wow.
Maybe by the time you get there, it'll be 1835.
Wow, that seems kind of cool. And there's also a number here perhaps people can call to get information as well, the 315-684-3262. Is that correct?
Yes, 315-684-3262. And you can get information there about how you might attend. One of the interesting footnotes to this is that at the banquet or dinner on Saturday evening, it'll be a dinner at which no, quote, slave sugar, unquote, will be served.
Right.
Gareth Smith was a strong believer that there should be no products in his household that were made by slave labor.
Wow.
So the restaurant that is catering the dinner that evening, we're not using any sugar as a kind of symbol of what Gareth Smith did.
Sure.
So I guess maybe there'll be maple syrup or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so how can we get your book? We're coming to a close here. Tell us how we can get your book. I'm sure you'll be selling it at the function, but is there any other place we can get your book?
Well, you can go to – it's on Amazon.com or should be pretty soon, but I can give my personal email address. That may be the quickest way. It's $10. So we're trying to keep the cost low so we get the story out. And the email address is mccernett, M-C-S-E-R-N-E-T-T, at windstream.net. Windstream is all one word, .net. And if folks send me $10 and $3 for, as they say, shipping and handling, we'll get one out to them pronto. The book, by the way, is both a history of these events as well as it reproduces, and this has never been done before, reproduces the original minutes of the founding events, the founding meetings, so that you can see who was there, what they said, Gareth Smith's speeches, and the like.
Great. Wonderful. Okay, well, we're going to close out here. This is The Antique Show with Push Nevada. Dr. Cernett joined us tonight. Dr. Cernett, thank you for joining
us.
I look forward to going to the program. I encourage everyone else to do the same. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.